And welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, Executive Director and Chief Curator of the Frost Museum, the Frost Art Museum at FIU, discusses with Judith Bishop their new season of exciting exhibitions. Chef Norman Van Aken plates up a word on food, and our arts calendar today features Marilyn Bauer, Director of Marketing with the Cultural Council of Palm Beach County. Born in Santa Clara, Cuba, and raised in Hialeah, our guest today started his musical career in 1979, becoming a flutist, saxophonist, and composer. He has released numerous recordings, the latest of which is called Jazz Flute. He is also the founder and president of the nonprofit Jazz Museum of Florida, doing business as Jazzonian. In 2013, he started the Jazzonian's Kids Club, an educational initiative that inspires family values and leadership principles as part of a jazz and music curriculum at Excelsior Language Academy. And we are pleased to welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat Mr. Bobby Ramirez. Welcome back to the show, Bobby.
Well, thank you, Ed. Hello, South Florida.
Yeah.
Honored to be here. Very honored. And thank you for having me.
Honored to have you here. Now, let's catch up. Your latest release is a wonderful session of mostly standards, Jazz Flute. Now, it's been out for just a while, but let's start talking about Jazz Flute. Great jazz standards, all blues, Someday My Prince Will Come, Miles Davis, Bluesette, was that Toots Thielman, I think? Stella by Starlight, It Might As Well Be Spring, When Sunny Gets Blue, and we opened it up with Dizzy's A Night in Tunisia. Those are juicy, juicy jazz standards.
Well, like you said, what can I add to that? Except that some of my favorite compositions, and you know, honoring the greats like Miles Davis, Dizzy Gillespie, particularly a Bluesette, which is a composition that was, well, it was recorded live at the Vienna Center for the Arts. So that's very special, that concert out there. So, you know, it's out. It's Jazz Flute.
Jazz Flute, and you've brought together a lot of great musicians from South Florida. Kiki Sanchez playing piano, plus the wonderful pianist, who am I thinking of?
Jose Negroni
joins you. And tell us about some of the other musicians on your new release.
Well, Jose Velasquez on bass, Antulio Mora on piano, Ivan Velasquez on drums, Rick Dahl on bass. Did the live session at the Blue at Vienna Center for the Arts. Mm-hmm. So it's a very exciting crew that very talented. You know, just blessed to have them as part of this these recordings.
Yeah, and the standards. The book continues, doesn't it? I mean, you know, you hear about the Great American Songbook and whatnot, and it kind of stops around the 50s or something like that. I love guys like you and great women in jazz who continue it through the 60s and 70s. I firmly believe Stevie Wonder should be on it. I mean, Frank Sinatra was singing George Harrison tunes, Beatles tune. So that says something. And would you continue the jazz legend, the list of jazz greats like this, and if so, any tunes you love from the 60s, 70s, 80s that might be on volume two, should you think about it?
The unique thing about this collection at Jazz Flute is it is jazz flute. It's a rare instrument in jazz. Not so rare, but typically more you hear like trumpets, saxophones, and those kind of instruments in jazz. So the interpretation of these tunes in flute, you know, is a continuation of the legacy from some of the flute greats like, you know, Hubert Laws and, you know, the others.
Herbie Mann,
yeah.
Dave Ballantyne. Love his work.
Yeah. So I'm really honored to be bringing this on flute in this day and age, and hopefully people find it inspiring and interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about jazz education, because Bobby Ramirez is known for jazz education for years and years and years. And Bobby, you are now working at the Excelsior Language Academy. In fact, they've got quite a commitment to jazz, do they not?
Yeah, a very unlikely place for jazz, Hialeah. I'm very happy to be there with Jasonian, which is a creative endeavor that I founded in 2009. And, you know, Hialeah is my hometown. And this school decided to have Jasonian there. You know, people can go and tour the, you know, Jazz Museum of Florida there, just call before to make an appointment. But the great thing is that I found that an initiative called Jasonian Kids Club, where mm-hmm. we're bringing these kids who never heard of jazz. We have a weekly class. And by the way, I volunteer for this like every week. Last year for the whole school year, and we're looking forward to doing this again this year, teaching kids about jazz. Inspiring kids with jazz, having kids. I think the main thing is for kids to internalize jazz. How do we do that? Well, play the records, have them sing, have them dance, have them move around, internalize jazz.
Bravo.
And that's what we need to do with the young generation, have them internalize jazz, because if we don't do that, it's just, it's... The future depends on these young generations knowing about jazz, knowing about the greats. So that's the work I do at Excelsior. I'm very happy to be there every week. Grades kindergarten through like eighth grade go through Jasonian every week. Mm-hmm. It's very exciting, especially the little kids, because you play Miles Davis tune the little kids and you tell them to dance. And they dance. I mean, if I stand there with an audience of older people like myself, 50, 60, and you tell them to dance,
we'd sit down.
But, that's the whole key. And jazz is a fun music. It's a music mm-hmm. of celebration. We mm-hmm. like to say that we like to celebrate, jazz heritage at Jasonian. So we make it a celebration every week for the kids listening to different types of jazz, mainly the old jazz from the starting point through the 60s, 70s, and all the greats. They listen to all of them.
Well, your commitment to jazz education is so wonderful, Bobby. There are several great programs all throughout South Florida, and the more the merrier, in my humble opinion, because it's part of American culture. It's contributed into by every ethnic group that arrives on our shores. You're of Cuban descent, and I think of the great Cuban percussionist Mongo Santa Maria, and he wrote some magnificent tunes that you probably play, I'm sure.
Well, I was first exposed to jazz in 1976 when I was attending a Henry H. Filer in Hialeah. Hmm. And by the way, I like to say that Jasonian Kids Club is also available throughout South Florida for any school that wants to host like an hour or a day of jazz. We can go to your school, we can present jazz. You need to call 305-298-2380, or go to the website www.jasonian.org. There's information there about Jasonian Kids Club, and we would love to go to your school, to your park, and present jazz in an interactive form for these kids. I think jazz, has the potential to inspire anybody.
Sure.
But it's critical at this stage of jazz that we get to the kids.
Yeah,
I mean, the kids' little faces are on cell phones, are on iPads. We got to, for 1 minute, expose them to this art form to make them dance, make them sing this music, make them, they might not get it now, but it's like a little seed that you plant there. Mm-hmm. A lot of these kids are going to be the future audiences of jazz. So we need to get to every kid, and that's the mission of Jasonian Kids Club.
Sure. One of the, as is well known, one of the great ingredients of jazz is the element of improvisation. And when kids learn that, they can actually contribute part of their hearts, part of their souls to this music. I would think it would be very inspiring and very exciting.
Well, it's exciting because we use records, the old records, to inspire kids at that moment. You put on a record and the kid is listening, and then you tell them, well, stand up and dance. And you tell them, well, what's improvisation? Well, go ahead and dance and I'll show you to this music. So they're moving their body to this music, and that's a great form for a kid to internalize the art form and know what's improvisation. Well, make something up that has a relation to the music, and that kid goes away, you know, internalizing that music. So that's one of the key factors that we focus on at the Jazzonian Kids Club.
So you're building a Jazzonian Youth Volunteer Corps, in essence. You're looking for students grades 9th through the 12th. And once again, more info at BobbyRamirez.com or Jazzonian, JAZZONIAN.org. And you can call 305-298-2380. Bobby, we have about a minute and a half. Any gigs coming up you want to talk about or any special classes? Are you going to be playing the music of Herbie Mann, another great jazz flute player at Jazzonian for Kids?
Well, right now, busy with a couple of projects that are community service projects. The new school year is coming, so we got Jazzonian Kids, so we're very busy preparing at the school for all the kids. Also, I'm producing, Jazzonian is producing the third annual Celebrate Charlie Parker Festival, so I'm busy working with that. We're going to have it at the Vienna Center for the Arts against this year in Fort Lauderdale.
A great humble performing arts center up in Broward, really wonderful, just west of 95.
Yeah, and the call goes out to musicians who want to participate. Send us an email, info@jazzonian.org.
Wonderful. Bobby Ramirez with us today, our first guest on South Florida Arts Beat. His new CD, Jazz Flute, has wonderful standards and great musicianship all throughout it. More information at BobbyRamirez.com and Jazzonian.org. For more info, you can also call 305-298-2380. Thank you so much, Bobby. Good luck.
Thank you, South Florida.
It's South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. This season, the Frost Art Museum at FIU will feature three different exhibitions offering contemporary Chinese art. It's quite a unique exhibition schedule here in South Florida, and Judith Bishop is here to tell us more.
Since art and academia are often simpatico, it's no surprise there are museums on college campuses throughout the country. The Yale Museum of Art in Connecticut, the Berkeley Art Museum in California, and here in South Florida, the Frost Art Museum on the campus of Florida International University. It's a natural connection. And university museums share another vital connection, philanthropy. In the case of the FIU Museum, Patricia and Philip Frost have lent their name and their resources to make the dream a reality and to underwrite its expansion. The Frost Museum is guided by Dr. Carol Damian, its director and chief curator. Dr. Damian is a graduate of Wheaton College and earned postgraduate degrees at the University of Miami. She's a nationally recognized art historian and the author of The Virgin of the Andes, Art and Ritual in Colonial Cuzco. Carol Damian, welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat. It's a very exciting time at the Frost Museum, where contemporary Chinese art is in the spotlight. Interesting choice. What prompted you to focus on that particular aspect of the art world?
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here. And it's fun to think back about China and the Frost Art Museum, and to realize that actually we have been doing a lot with China and Chinese art since the museum was built, which was 6 years ago. It first came about because one of our major supporters is a woman from Taiwan. Her name is Jane Shao. And she gave an endowment to the museum for Asian art studies. She also has a gallery at the museum that is named after her family. And it was my relationship with her that prompted an interest in contemporary Chinese art, because one of the first things that she introduced me to was art from Taiwan. I didn't know anything about art from Taiwan, and she brought a group of artists to the museum and said, with their portfolios, and said, this is what they do. These are very traditional artists, and these are very contemporary artists, and they work very much together, and you have to understand the past in order to understand the present. So I had a little bit of an education about China through Taiwan. We did an exhibit that she sponsored. She brought the artists from Taiwan. She brought the works. It included beautiful traditional ink paintings. It included photography, kind of National Geographic photography of some of the most beautiful locations in Taiwan, and other works of art by young artists who were really breaking the boundaries and breaking out of the traditions, but never losing respect for those traditions. So that was kind of our introduction. Then, of course, FIU opened a campus in China. We have a School of Hospitality Management at the university in Tianjin, China. So our relationship at an academic level is very important as well. After the Taiwan show, a couple of other exhibits were proposed to me that we jumped on, knowing that Jane would like us to support these exhibits. We did an exhibit called East Meets West, which was a traveling show that also showed the way Chinese artists looked to the West. We think at the beginning of the modern world, the late 19th, early 20th century, there was a lot of interest in looking towards China, especially towards the tradition calligraphy and beautiful works on the scrolls and on paper. And then, of course, there was the fascination of the French artists with Japanese prints. So we see how modern artists began to incorporate ideas from Asia into their work. And then as the world got smaller and smaller, there's this wonderful back and forth that occurred. What was striking about this exhibit that we did called East Meets West is these are artists who are very much looking at us and fascinated by McDonald's and Burger King and Coca-Cola.
I will never understand that, but I know it's universally
true.
It's
very universally true. And you don't expect it from Chinese artists. You know, that there's such a preponderance of information and advertising that occurs. So that was another way that contemporary artists were looking at us. So, you know, to make a long story short, we've always had, since the museum opened, an interest in China.
Well, landing this particular exhibition was quite a coup because the Frost is the only United States stop on the world tour. Mm-hmm. How does that work behind the scenes? Is there a lot of political and economic dealing back and forth?
Oh, yes.
Share
some
secrets.
It has certainly been one of our most interesting projects. That we never thought would actually open the night that it opened. And you can read between the lines a little bit, the artist never made it. There was problem with paperwork, a passport being stolen, not being able to get a visa, and poor Simon never showed up for his opening reception.
This is Simon Ma.
Simon Ma. Yeah. We did have his team there, including his brother, his mother, two women that are like his PR people, and an installer, a technical installer, because the work is very technical. So we did have a whole team. They arrived on time. The work finally got here. We didn't know whether it was going to make it through customs. We did not know if the broker was going to be able to get it to us. And we all had our fingers crossed until like 2 days before the exhibit was supposed to actually open. But everything fell into place, as it does. We waited and we waited, and Simon never got on the plane.
Political
dealings. You know, I don't want to speculate about what happened. It was complex, But unfortunately, he didn't make it. But he promises that he is going to come back in October for a closing event. So many people are anxious to meet him. So it was very interesting. The whole process has been very, very interesting.
Well, the whole process of political suppression, Ai Weiwei, and some of the other stories are really crystallized the problems going on behind the scenes
always,
there.
Always. And so it was, I don't want to say that it was surprising that he didn't make it, but he didn't make it to his opening.
Let's talk about his work. It's called Heart, Water, Ink. It's a 70-piece exhibit, multimedia, even a 3D video. What are some of the pieces that you feel are most important in the collection?
Well, he is a very multimedia artist. He works in painting, very traditional calligraphy, inkbrush painting. That's his training. He's a sculptor. He is also an artist who's a designer. He's a furniture designer. He's a jewelry designer. He went to Murano in Italy. He was fascinated by glass and went back to China. And from what he learned, he was able to create crystal pieces that are based on his experience in Murano. He works in polyurethanes and resins to create monumental sculptures. I think that the most dramatic piece in the show is a dragon horse. His name is Ma. Ma means horse in Chinese, and it is also 2014, the year of the horse. So the horse is throughout the exhibit. Grand scale horses, life-size horses, and then this amazing dragon horse.
Simon Ma certainly is a Renaissance man. Mm-hmm. He's not only an artist, but he's also studied music and architecture, and I guess his music perhaps led to a friendship with Julian Lennon, John Lennon's son,
yes,
and a collaboration as well.
Yes, I met Simon in 2012 at Art Asia. And I was walking through the fair, and I saw a group of people standing around this artist who was actually, in a very performative manner, creating an inkbrush painting on a long, long, 9-foot-long scroll as people watched. And he was demonstrating, he was explaining what he was doing, how everything is so prescribed, it's so meticulous, and it looks like it's spontaneous, but you can't do it unless you know how to do it.
I was there and saw that.
You saw
that. It was memorable.
Yes, it was very memorable. And in the crowd was a young man taking photographs. Did you see him? Did you notice him?
I did not notice, no.
And I looked at this young man and I thought, gee, he looks very familiar. And I was with the Chinese art professor at Florida International University. And of course, this man wasn't at all familiar to her. But, you know, I said, doesn't he look familiar? But she didn't know who he was. And then I realized when I saw all the paparazzi and everything happening, who it was. And found out that, yes, indeed, that they had become friends, that Simon is a trained musician. And there's a lot of music that is apparent in his work as well. But that they were going to do a collaborative jam session at the Art Center as part of the whole Art Basel scene. So, yeah, that's a different part of him as well.
It is. Art Basel, it's been an amazing thing for Miami. Mm-hmm. There's so much more to talk about the Frost Museum. We'll be back shortly with Carol Damian, the director and the chief curator.
Please stay with us. The conversation will continue on South Florida Arts Beat right after these messages. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Now we return to the conversation between our arts contributor Judith Bishop
and Carol Damian.
We're back on South Florida Arts Beat with Carol Damian, one of the art leaders in Miami. She is the director and the chief curator at the Frost Museum at FIU. Carol, you are featuring Chinese art. I guess you could call it a trilogy. The first artist you're featuring, Simon Ma. And up next, and I hope I pronounce this properly, is Wang Xingchong. How would you describe his distinctive style, and how does it differ from the other contemporary Chinese artists?
Wang Xingchong is primarily a photographer, and basic to his work is trying to capture the radical changes that have been taking place in China and how these changes have affected the people. So he goes and he takes thousands of photographs that represent the old and the new. So you might see a young kid that looks like he could come off of South Beach, and then next to it, a very traditional elderly person in beautiful ancient style garments. And then the social clash that occurs when the young are trying to modernize maybe what we would describe as too fast, and the rest of the population doesn't quite understand that. As the world has really shrunk, and the awareness of a young generation to what is going on in the rest of the world has really, that's really captivated them, and they want to be a part of that. And it's a big jump, it's a leap in China from the end of the Cultural Revolution to what is happening today. It's quick when you think of it, it's like 50 years, but the changes have been so incredibly dramatic, and it's affected everybody. We know the stories of them just mowing down parts of the city so that they can build a skyscraper, and relocating. So Wang Xingchong is addressing those issues through his photographs, and kind of the photographs are almost like clashes of images. And he installs these photographs in huge, monumental, theatrical arrangements. So an entire wall, 12 feet by 12 feet, might be covered with the photographs to create a theater set. It's like a drama. And frequently you will see that in front of the photographs, you'll see a man on a ladder, and that will be the artist who's photographed himself into this. So he's become part of the cultural change as well, and trying to make sense of it, because it doesn't make sense at all.
An Alfred Hitchcock moment.
Exactly, an Alfred Hitchcock moment.
Tell me something. You said he has taken thousands of photographs. Mm-hmm. Is there any censorship? Is there any penalty involved if he photographs something that the powers that be would prefer not to have photographed?
I think there probably would be, and perhaps in his career this has happened. But at this point, I don't think his work is meant to be as overtly critical as we might imagine. It's such a cacophony of images. It's not as if he has just one image that he's focusing on saying, you know, look at this, look at what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're destroying our people. But rather, they're so mixed up that it defies censorship in that respect.
What are the dates of his show?
Wang Xingchong is going to open on November 8th. And close on January 18th. So okay. He's going right through the height of the season.
And rounding out your tour, it's The Art of Xu Bing. That opens mm-hmm. in February, and it's another perspective on the contemporary scene in China from a leading artist who recently exhibited at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. What is his life like, and his work, and his artist perspective on the world?
Well, this is probably one of China's most important artists. And his art is completely different from Simon Ma's art and from Wang Xingchong's art. Technically different. However, what the three of them have in common is that they are all commenting on dramatic changes in China, and they are all commenting on a respect for tradition and bringing it into a modern world through their own media. Xu Bing is currently exhibiting in New York with an extraordinary installation at St. John the Divine, where he has installed two huge phoenixes, two huge birds, right from the ceiling of the nave. And the birds are made out of recycled construction materials. Construction, very important in China, and he's gathered these materials and created these amazing birds. So he's very much in the scene. But the work that is at the Metropolitan Museum of Art is part of the exhibit called Ink Art, is Book from the Sky, and that is actually coming to us. So we are thrilled that we're going to be able to bring this very important work. It's beautiful. It's a scroll, a handmade paper scroll that literally hangs from the sky with book pages on the floor beneath it. Every one of these pages looks, at first glance, like traditional Chinese calligraphy. But it is actually calligraphy that has been reinvented and redefined by Xu Bing into his own contemporary language. For instance, he can take my name, Carol, and he will invent a calligraphic notation for Carol. I don't know how he does that, but he did it for me. And I look at it and I think, wow, that looks really beautiful. That looks like Chinese calligraphy. And then he'll say, look carefully, and you'll see the C and the A, and they're all integrated into this mark. So he's using Western words and Western language, but he is creating a Chinese symbol for it.
That's an example of the globalization of art.
Right, right.
Just encapsulated. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Amazing. Now, in conjunction with these special exhibitions, FIU has added a new art professor to the faculty, Li Duyi.
Li Duyi, Professor
and
Li Duyi.
What's her background and what's her area of expertise and how does that link with what you're mm-hmm, exhibiting mm-hmm. at the Frost Museum?
Li Du is a scholar. Her expertise is in the Buddhist caves, which is where she is right now. So she is in the caves documenting the imagery there, interpreting the imagery there, and working in a very ancient art form. However, she is a very modern woman, and she studies contemporary Chinese art and teaches contemporary Chinese art. I've had the pleasure to hear her talk and to hear her give art tours. And what is fascinating about her grasp of the contemporary world from a scholar's perspective, of course, but I think what makes it special is that she's coming from antiquity. She's coming from an understanding of the ancient images, the ancient traditions, and all of the rich symbolism that is involved in that as well. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating, and you have given us an eye-opening insider's look at the world of contemporary Chinese art, which will be on view for almost 6 months
yes.
in one form or another at the Frost Museum on the mm-hmm. campus of FIU. We thank you so very, very much for being here today and for bringing us these important exhibitions.
Thank you for having me. Come visit.
For more information on exhibits and programs at the Frost Art Museum, log on to thefrost.fiu.edu or telephone 305-348-2890. For South Florida Arts Beat, this is Judith Bishop.
Judith Bishop is a television journalist who has covered breaking news, politics, and the arts for WABC and CNBC. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will return in just a moment.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I want the fram-fram sauce with the arse and fame, with shafafa on the side. Shoot-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food is fritters. Acarajé, anyone? That word, if you are not familiar, refers to what was originally a West African fritter. Brazilian as well now, hence the Portuguese word. It's made principally from black-eyed peas. There are a variety of names for fritters. Bacalhaitos, ubiquitous in Latin restaurants and homes, are members of the same family as acras in Trinidad, stamp and go in Jamaica, and acra de maru in the French Caribbean. Some have raising agents in their batter, like yeast or baking soda. Some don't. The basic idea descends from a universal archetype, and that archetype seems to be West African, a fritter called acra. Acra, if singular, acras, if plural. If you visit Key West, I urge you to find the little grocery store with a food stand within named Five Brothers. They are famous for making black-eyed pea fritters, which, down there, are known as boyos. The very best I've ever had were made in a home by a native Key Wester named Sheila Sands. Isn't that a perfect name for a woman born in Key West? She lives up to it, and so do her fritters. Raymond Sokolov writes in his concise and brilliant book, Why We Eat What We Eat, the fritter vocabulary of the Caribbean is immense, unprecedented in Europe, where the idea is mostly limited to desserts. But in the French islands, one finds fritters based on taro, hearts of palm, chayote, breadfruit, pumpkin, black-eyed peas, minnows, crayfish, and of course, salt cod. As listeners know, I cooked in Key West for almost 20 years. Conch fritters could have certainly been called conch acras. But the largely English-speaking Bahamians chose a word easier for them, of course. I was listening to a song by the colorfully named British band Pink Floyd on the radio recently, and the singer was reciting lyrics that must have been a parent's lament. You fritter and waste the hours in an offhand way. One word in a phrase like that, and I'm off, wondering about the duality of meanings, word roots, and of course, when was the last time I had a good fritter, the edible ones? In the Tomás Sánchez novel, Mile Zero, there is a character named Justo Tamarindo, who is a police officer in Key West. He is a broad-shouldered man with a smoldering sense of duty. But that is not all that smolders in him. He spends a great deal of time drinking thimble-sized cups of potent, black, sugary espresso and consuming conch fritters. It puts his stomach in turmoil. He is a third-generation conch of Afro-Cuban lineage, and he cannot help himself. I can't help myself. Conch fritters are part of the good life there. They are loved up on the mainland, too. I eat them when I know they are authentic and made with a generous portion of conch. I like them with just a squeeze of lime or a dab of our hot chili pepper jelly. The key to the best fritters is that there is plenty of sweet conch meat that is perfectly ground and just enough batter to create a cohesive bond to keep the little ball from just dropping to the bottom of the fryer, which, by the way, is the way fritters are cooked. In fact, that's where fritters get their name. In France, they're called beignets. Beignets didn't make it into the Pink Floyd song. Fritter that. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of the memoir, No Experience Necessary, The Culinary Odyssey of Norman Van Aken. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Frito Pie. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat Entertainment Calendar. And we welcome back Marilyn Bauer, Director of Marketing and Government Affairs for the Cultural Council of Palm Beach County. Marilyn, how's life these days?
Life's good, Ed. How about you?
Good. Thank goodness. And I bet there's a lot going on in Palm Beach County.
There is always a lot going on in Palm Beach County. For example, this weekend, Palm Beach Photographic Center has an amazing exhibition. You can take in some of the world's most arresting photos when you visit Best of Photojournalism. It's a festival, August 8th and 9th. It features work by the National Press Photographers Association, which is the largest alliance of professional visual journalists in the world. And there were over 35,000 entries this year. The center's hoping that this will become an annual event. And on Friday, they're having a little opening party. And then all day Saturday, they're going to have a series of panel discussions that they really hope will connect the public with these photojournalists. So it's a very interesting sort of participatory kind of exhibition this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you love the hit television show Salem, you're going to love what's on tap at the Maltz Jupiter Theater. You can really go back to the source material to see The Crucible, which opens on August 16th. There's only one performance. But The Crucible is featuring local students ages 12 through 17 who have spent their summer at the Maltz participating in this free summer mentorship program. So since there's only one performance, it's the kind of thing where you want to go out and get your tickets now. On August 11th, Il Circolo and the Mission Chamber Orchestra of Rome will team up to present Summerfest at the Doubletree by Hilton on PGA Boulevard. The concert will be a complete Italian experience with the Prosecco pre-concert reception where you can meet the musicians and then enjoy the concert afterwards. The Kravis Center has just announced their 23rd season. And it's going to be a really exciting season. This year you're going to be able to hear and see Audra McDonald, Joshua Bell, Boss Gags, Tony Bennett on Valentine's Day.
Love them.
Oh, who doesn't? Diana Krall and Dave Mason.
Love her.
Oh, I know. For something a little bit different, you can go down to the Colony Hotel on Friday night starting at about 9:30 in the Polo Lounge and listen to hits from Motown of the 60s, 70s, and 80s with a band called Memory Lane. They perform music from The Temptations, The Supremes, Gladys Knight and the Pips, Smokey Robinson, Marvin Gaye, you name it. There's still a lot of theater going on this summer in August at the Plaza Theater in Manalapan. There's a musical tribute to Fanny Bryce, Eddie Cantor, and Al Jolson. So you can go in, tap your feet to some of those old classics that everyone loves. And at the Lake Worth Playhouse, they have their Summer Stars children's performance on August 8th. The Crest Theater in Delray Beach, they have a really interesting production starting on August 21st. It's called Pass It On, An Evening with Bill W. and Dr. Bob. And these are the guys that co-founded Alcoholics Anonymous. And the play is an inspirational and often hilarious story about the discovery of the 12-step program that has transformed so many lives. It's a limited engagement, and it's the production's third year of touring in North America. And of course, it's always great to go over to the Norton for Art After Dark. It's going on all summer long, every Thursday night from 5 to 9 p.m. And if you go, you hear great music, there's great people watching, there's curator conversations, there's a DJ, and this Thursday there'll be a scavenger hunt. And for North County, the Jupiter Inlet Lighthouse and Museum on August 9th, they're going to have a moonrise tour. This is a great way to see the spectacular evening view of a full moon from the top of the tower. The tour takes about an hour, maybe a little bit more, and it's a little warm outside, so it's good to bring some water with you when you're going up all those steps. And also because it's summer, it's a great time of year to really enjoy some of the gardens that you find with our arts institutions. So, for example, the Society of the Four Arts, which is just over the Royal Park Bridge in Palm Beach, there is the beautiful sculpture gardens originally designed as an outdoor museum that showcase works of art, and as well as lush tropical landscaping. And it's really become a popular destination for art and nature lovers. There's 16 notable bronze sculptures from a variety of artists, and there's a new addition, a piece by the iconic pop artist who did those blocks of love that you saw everywhere, called King Parrot. So it's a wonderful place to spend a little time. You know, it's cool in there, and it's just beautiful. And finally, one more sculpture garden, just to kind of even it out with North and South County, is the Boca Raton Museum of Art has a beautiful sculpture garden. It's a great place to kind of go from the luxurious cool of the museum's interior outside and sit on a couple of benches and take a look at some beautiful art and just be happy that you're alive.
Marilyn, where can we find out more information about these and other events in Palm Beach County?
Please go to palmbeachcounty.com/events.
And that's the ever-informative Ms. Marilyn Bauer, Director of Marketing and Government Affairs for the Cultural Council of Palm Beach County. Marilyn, have a great weekend.
You too.
Well, I had an enjoyable morning, I must say, attending the superintendent's opening of schools address at the beautiful Miami Senior High School, I believe the first senior high school in Miami-Dade County. 1902, I think, was the initial date it was built. And as an employee of the Miami-Dade Public School System, I was thoroughly delighted by the whole event. The Diamond Chorus sang beautifully. The Miami Senior High School Jazz Band really swung with marvelous jazz standards. Of course, the school board members were there, and the president of the Miami-Dade County Council of PTA and PTSAs was there, Mr. Joseph Jabara. And, of course, our superintendent of Miami-Dade County Public Schools, Florida's superintendent, and the National Superintendent of the Year, Mr. Alberto Carvalho, gave a magnificent speech. And he included the thought, an education with no arts is no education. And to hear that during his speech and his wonderful commitment to educating kids about the arts in all of their diversity was just so wonderful to hear. Bravo, Superintendent Carvalho. Bravo, sir. We'll rebroadcast South Florida Arts Beat tonight and every Friday night at 7 o'clock on our WLRN Extra HD channel. You can tune in on your HD radio or go to our beautiful website at WLRN.org for more information. That's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We enjoyed. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we certainly did. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer. Thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and our contributors, Judith Bishop, Norman Van Aken, and Marilyn Bauer. Call us with your comments, 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information, 305-995-2221, or email it to us at info@WLRN.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend, and please keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Until next time, Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.